It's time now for Oh, the Humanities, taking a look at humanities scholarship research and events on campus and off, and now a lot online these days, of course, too. Humanities.unc.edu for more on Carolina Public Humanities and the activities and events and initiatives and programs they've got going all the time, including several that are happening this week. Joined in the studio, we're joined on the phone by a special guest. We'll introduce her in just a second. Joined in the studio by Max Orr, who heads up Carolina Public Humanities. Max, how are you?
I am doing just fine, considering all of the chaos and crazy news that keeps flooding us. We're one day away from a really momentous historical day. As an historian, I am just I like to look at the past from the future.
Yes,
and I don't like to be on this side of this incredible day, but it will be remarkable, and I hope everyone is out there and has voted and done their part for democracy. Yeah. And you know, so I. You know, a few things, Aaron. I wanted to bring you, of course, a gift. My one gift related to today's date is in 1755, Marie Antoinette was born.
Okay.
So for every high point, there's a downfall. I don't know what I'm going to just try to stretch that metaphor out there a little bit.
But think you live long enough to see yourself become the villain, might be?
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things, we do have some programs I want to mention, but I'm here in particular to promote our biography program, Lunch with Friends and Strangers, and it is just been a remarkable way for us to we do this, of course, with the General Alumni Association. It's free and open to the public discussions. It's been a great way for us to get really like in depth with some people that you know you might know or have heard about, but learn more about them. We just did Billie Jean King last week. It was really wonderful, and we have a wonderful, not only a wonderful friend, faculty person who we're going to bring on in just a moment, but also, of course, a great stranger, and that is Elizabeth Barrett Browning. And I just wanted to read this poem to us. Because I feel like it's something we all need right now.
Okay.
And it's called Patience Taught by Nature. And I, please forgive me, our guests will have to forgive my interpretation or my reading if I mess any of this up. Patience taught by nature. O dreary life, we cry, O dreary life. And still the generations of the birds sing through our sighing, and the flocks and herds serenely live while we are keeping strife with heaven's true purpose in us as a knife against which we may struggle. Ocean girds unslackened the dry land, savanna swords unweary sweep, hills watch unworn, and rife meek leaves drop yearly from the forest trees to show above the unwasted stars that pass in their old glory. O thou God of old, grant me some smaller grace than comes to these, but so much patience as a blade of grass grows by contented through the heat and cold. I feel like there's a lesson in there for us to realize that things are bigger than the human condition. And let me bring on a wonderful human, Professor of English, Beverly Taylor, who will be our guest this Friday for Lunch with Friends and Strangers. Welcome, Beverly Taylor.
Beverly, good to have you.
Thank you, Max. It's good to be with you. And I have to applaud your reading. It was a good choice.
I feel like there's something remarkable about words that are timeless, if you will. Let me just give a little background on our guest. Beverly Taylor is a professor of English and comparative literature, and especially Victorian literature and British literature, but of course an expert on 20th century American literature, all sorts of expertise, but has written extensively on Byron, Shelley, Charlotte Bronte, Tennyson, and in particular Elizabeth Barrett Browning, with a momentous publication of collected works put out, I think, 2010 or 2012, just a remarkable edition of all these works. So, Beverly, what is it about Elizabeth Barrett Browning that can speak to us so pointedly 150, 160 years after these poems were written?
That's an excellent question, and I have to start by saying when I was in graduate school, I was at Duke, and I had a Victorian professor who was very famous. He had written widely on the Victorians. And he, in our class, passed out a mimeograph sheet listing Victorian poets we needed to know something about, but because they were second tier, we didn't have to read anything by them. So he listed on that handout Elizabeth Barrett Browning. Of course, I'm very old, so this was back in the late 1970s, before the feminist revolution in academia. And but I think it's significant that he, as so many had, in the 20th century had just discounted EBB.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And is that somehow related to, how about this, where was Robert in that assessment?
Okay, interestingly, he and Tennyson were regarded in the late 1970s as the most outstanding Victorian poets, and I think that's still true today with the significant addition of Elizabeth Barrett Browning. So now we have a trio of magnificent poets representing that period. But to come back to your question of why is she so significant to us today, I have to say it's because she was the first important woman poet in the English language. And by important, I mean sort of transcending the category of the poetess, where most women poets were included. And they were noted for writing pretty and sweet verse that was sentimental and touched your hearts. And EBB made a point of violating those expectations. She was a woman who wrote as a woman poet, not a poetess. And she wanted people to pay attention to her artistry as well as to what she had to say, and it wasn't always pretty and touching. And that's something that I find my students still respond to today. When they encounter her, they are really excited to find a woman writer of the 19th century who's writing not only about women's issues, but also about slavery, mm-hmm. and other political topics of the time.
Yeah, I was looking at Elizabeth Barrett Browning earlier today, just in preparation for this conversation, and she was such a remarkable figure beyond her writing. She's an abolitionist, she's an anti-slavery advocate, a feminist, an advocate against child labor. Like, she was involved in so much, so many important political movements.
Yes, and actually I've just finished writing a huge book manuscript focused on her work. It's way too big. Nobody will ever want to publish such a long book.
Oh, we're going to get them wanting it after Friday, I promise you, Beverly.
Well, I hope so. But the way I conclude that book manuscript is to talk about her in conjunction with Alfred Tennyson, who became the poet laureate in 1850. And she was very outspoken about wanting to address political issues of the day, whereas he was much less aggressive in talking about politics. And he wanted to present both sides of an issue and leave it up to readers to decide where they stood. And she was having none of that. So it's really quite interesting to read her work against his, which is very poetic, very beautiful. I love his writing, but she's much more stirring to the blood.
You know, it's interesting. As we do this, we're going to be talking about Elizabeth Barrett Browning's life and sort of situating her in her time and place, as well as, you know, her relationship with Robert Browning. And I know one of the things that you are very interested in are honeymoons and Victorian honeymoons. And what can you tell us briefly about why that is sticking out to you as something of interest with Elizabeth Barrett Browning?
Well, that's a good question, too, because one thing people have always been interested in is her love sonnet sequence, sonnets from the Portuguese, that she wrote during their courtship. And most of your listeners probably know that she was a shut-in invalid for much of her adult life until she married. And she and Robert went to Italy, and she lived a much more open public life from that point on. But Sonnets from the Portuguese is quite an interesting sequence, but it's been presented to most people as a kind of sappy reading. The one poem that most of your listeners probably know is How Do I Love mm-hmm. Thee? Let Me Count the Ways. And actually, we can think more interestingly about that poem if we think about it as being written in a period when utilitarianism was the dominant philosophy. when people liked being able to weigh and measure and count and consider how useful something was to achieving the greatest good for the greatest number of people. So when she asked the question and answers it by saying, let me count the ways, and then she begins to measure width and breadth, depth, and so on, that's a very unusual way of talking about love, isn't it?
Yeah.
We don't usually think of it as something we can count or weigh or measure.
Is this a positivist influence?
Well, maybe so, but I do think it's mostly that she was tumbling under utilitarianism to unsettle it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she turns it into a much more abstract notion of loving beyond death and so on. So, but I mention that only to suggest that most people relate her to Sonnets from the Portuguese and think of her as the adoring wife of the greater husband. In his own day, Robert Browning was not really known or widely regarded until after she had died in 1861. And then he began to develop his poetry in interesting ways that enabled readers to understand better how to read dramatic monologues. But she was very famous in her own day when he was not even known to the reading public. She once got a letter that was addressed to Elizabeth Barrett, poetess, London. That was it.
And people knew where that was going.
They found her.
Yeah. Speaking with Beverly Taylor, again, she's going to be speaking on Friday at noon is the day and time, lunchtime discussion of Elizabeth Barrett Browning. Humanities.unc.edu is the website. We've got to start wrapping up, but that discussion on Friday, what will it entail? What will you go into?
Oh, I never did really address your point. You were asking about their honeymoon. Well, I think most people have known the Brownings through their famous love story, that they married, and most people think of them eloping to Italy. I wouldn't use that term. But they married secretly because her father was opposed to any of his adult children marrying, which is weird, because he had 11 children. Mm. Why was he against marrying? So that in itself is a kind of interesting place to start talking about the Brownings, to get to what we care about in their poetry rather than the love story that we know of them.
Well, and as I was telling Beverly, these conversations, they go in many directions, but we'll be sure that people are well situated with a sense of who she was and why she's important, and hopefully we'll be driven to read more of her work and, of course, to read Beverly Taylor's work.
Well, I hope they will read EBB for sure.
For sure.
Again, speaking with Beverly Taylor, humanities.unc.edu for more information on that event and other upcoming events. Max, I got to start wrapping up, what else is coming up?
Well, I want to quickly put a plug in for two events. One is Bart Ehrman's is going to be doing Heaven or Hell, a four-part talk on the exegesis of the idea of heaven and hell in the New Testament and Old Testament as well. Some controversial ideas there, but always very well delivered. And Bart Ehrman, that's available, of course, on our website. And next week, free and open to the public, Chris Browning, used to teach at the university for years, was a resident expert on the Holocaust, will be coming back and looking again at his classic book, Ordinary Men, and reevaluating what that means. So we hope people come and sign up for that, humanities.unc.edu. And of course, join us this Friday for Beverly and I with lunch and friends and strangers.
That's coming up in just a few days. Max Orr, thank you so much. Beverly Taylor, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Brian.
Max. It was a great pleasure.
All right. Take care.